But it's NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman back with us for, I want to say, visit number three, Mr. Commissioner. How are you, sir?
I'm great. That sounds right. I'm not sure how I take being the substitute for a bad opening.
Well, we'll get to the open. It just won't start, but no, don't take that personally at all. And do you remember?
We just have so many things overlapping. We do have a Mavs press conference.
Yes.
You know, the NBA draft was last night, and I did want to ask, do you put any thought at all into the calendar like that? Like, hey, oh, I see the NBA scheduled their draft. Why don't we wait a week, or just something to give yourself more of the news cycle?
We have our own timetable in terms of when our schedule ends, when we have our award show, when we have our general manager's meeting, our board meeting, and we want to get this underway before free agency starts. So, but it's not surprising. I mean, obviously, we didn't do it on the same night, which would have been ridiculous.
Yeah.
And even during the Stanley Cup final and the NBA final, we were alternating nights. I mean, we just happened to have similar times of the year that we play, and we just try and deal with it the best we can.
I like that, though. I like the alternating nights thing. It might frustrate my wife, but it allows a full stage for each of the finals, which is wonderful. Do you guys have to, like, does one sport have to wait for the other to declare their schedule? Or how does that even work?
We are both sort of locked in with our broadcast partners.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously if one of us wants to make a shift, then the other's probably going to have to respond, because it would make no sense for us to play our finals on the same night. Although I do think we had a game possibly where we were up against the game seven of
yes.
the NBA. I mean, it's going to happen. You know, it's good for sports fans. You can flip back and forth, and not every hockey fan is a basketball fan, and vice versa.
Yeah, and it's an interesting conversation, because, of course, if people don't know, and they should, but if they don't, it might not be their living to know your full backstory. You were, in fact, second in command in the NBA for quite a while. Is that several years?
Second or third, and I was there for 12 years.
And then the NHL hired you because of those credentials you established in the NBA.
Yes, of course. The NBA was on a good run then.
And yes, it was. And so that was 1993.
Yes.
When you come over to the league, did you foresee your own 25-year anniversary in this position?
You know, if you think about becoming the commissioner of a major sport, and then you think about doing it for 25 or more years, they probably then medicate you and lock you away, because, you know, it's, with all the twists and turns of life, nobody could have predicted this. And, you know, I don't typically dwell on 25 years, because, as you guys know, things go in the blink of an eye.
Yes.
What I find most significant about the time frame is my youngest child, my daughter, one of my two daughters, gave birth to her first child in January. She was 4 years old when I started this job.
Wow. Any regrets? Anything you look back in maybe early years that, oh man, if I had that over, I'd do it a little bit different?
Well, you know, there are always things you learn from, whether or not it's procedures we use in vetting new prospective owners, whether or not it's how you make rule changes and things like that. But nothing that was like, oh boy, you know. I mean, do I regret, for example, whenever we relocate a franchise? You know, people in Quebec City are still unhappy about that, and
yeah.
I understand it. But one of the things we always believe, maybe it was learned knowledge, but we've always believed that you try and avoid moving franchises if at all possible, because we know how much communities and people, fans, invest in the teams, not just financially, but emotionally.
Yeah, and your beginning of your commissionership darn near coincides perfectly with the Stars coming to Dallas.
What a coincidence. Actually, I was at a chamber breakfast this morning, and I told this anecdote. So Norm Green, in the spring of 1993, decided to move the Minnesota North Stars to Dallas. And he was visionary, because this is obviously a great place for us to be. And leaving Minnesota was painful. That is the state of hockey. But the good news is, jumping ahead and then I'll jump back.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Wild are doing great, and hockey, even or especially at the NHL level, has never been stronger or better. But I was in, I happened to be in Winnipeg the day Norm announced that he was moving the club. And the next morning after the game I went to in Winnipeg, I was flying home back to the East Coast, and you needed to change in Minnesota flying from Winnipeg.
Almost no direct flights from Winnipeg.
Not to New York.
Yeah.
And so I get, there's a layover in Minnesota, and the media is full of commentary, to say the least, on the fact that the North Stars were relocating, and there was a snowstorm on the East Coast, and my flight was canceled. And this was before 9/11, and I'm saying to myself, is this really where I want to spend the weekend? And I went to the next gate, and I said, where are you going? And they said, Chicago. I said, great, I'm coming.
Perfect.
Anywhere, not Minnesota.
I will go there. Man, what are the odds that happens and you're standing in the airport in that city?
Yes.
That's poor timing.
But all's well that ends well.
Yes.
The Stars are doing great here, and the Minnesota Wild are doing great in St. Paul. So at the time, painful and disconcerting, but it worked out.
No, but every time the Dallas Stars, during this 25-year anniversary, they have a they have a number of things they were recognizing and honoring, and each one of them seems to start with a small video to capture the 25 years, and the very first thing is you at Reunion Arena welcoming the NHL to Dallas, or Dallas to the NHL, or whatever you said. I've seen it 1,000 times that you would think I know what you said.
Oh, I'm not sure I remember what I said. I'll take your word for it. But I guess in 25 years, you know, you get to be a certain age and you forget things. But seriously, we believed that coming to Dallas, and Dallas 25 years ago was, what, half the size that it is now, the Metroplex. So it has been great to see not just this market grow, but when you look at the growth of hockey. I think Jim Leitz told me when he came here with Norm Green, there was one rink, and now there are 20. There are thousands of registered players. We have players who've grown up here, like Seth Jones, who actually made it to the NHL. Hockey is thriving, and so is Dallas. Maybe it's not a coincidence.
Well, yeah, maybe it's not. We reflect on that quite a bit. This is NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman in our studio. As the NHL draft, of course, is tonight in the city, and people are quite excited in the hockey world. How many great careers are starting tonight officially as teams, elbow each other to get the finest of the 18-year-olds to enter professional hockey and begin their journey. And so as we look at where the league is right now, you got a lot of things on your plate, as always. They of course don't stop with the problems and the headaches and the solutions that aren't always full solutions. So we have to keep working on it. So it feels like replay and goalie interference is a very big thing going on these days. How satisfied are you with where we are with that right now?
Well, you know, we have all the major sports have the longest history in replay, and in fact, all the other sports have gone to school on what we've done. We've been doing it for more than 20 years. And we extended it a couple of years ago with a coach's challenge for offsides and for goaltender interference. Offsides, a little easier because that's more of a crystal clear call, a lot less judgment.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can have some judgment on the issue of control, but for the most part, it's pretty clear cut. And it was intended to cut out the egregious mistakes. Goaltender interference, a little tougher because in all respects, it's a judgment call. And when we went to the coach's challenge, the notion was we really wanted to correct the egregious mistake. For example, you call goaltender interference on an offensive player and he never touched the goaltender. It was the goaltender's teammate that did it. That's what we were looking to correct. Or there was contact that nobody saw. What happened as it evolved was when there was some contact and everybody saw it, we were getting challenges about, well, how much contact was there? And that's purely a judgment call. We reduced dramatically the number of offside calls by putting in a 2-minute penalty. We also went to calling the end result of the review centrally out of our situation room in Toronto, which is monitoring every game in real time. And partially through the season, we switched on goaltender interference to give that call to the situation room as well, because they're watching every game, and the sense was the teams would be more comfortable if they were getting that level of consistency. And it really wasn't much of an issue after we went to that role. We put a retired official in the situation's room as well. And so the last end of the regular season, the playoffs, it didn't seem to be very controversial. So we're going to keep an eye on it through this season as well, and if we have to tweak it, we will. But overall, it's working right, because the goal is to correct egregious calls on important plays.
It feels like, and now the World Cup is dealing with it in real time, and if you follow all of these sports, it's really interesting to me that they all kind of have similar discussions in the media and the fandom. Of two sides, that one wants the sport to never change, the other wants every technological advantage used to. It looks like if we ever go to video replay, it will be a perfect solution. It never is.
No, it isn't, and for a couple of reasons. Listen, fans want, our clubs want, our players want us to get it right. Okay, but let's face it, in all sports, there are going to be mistakes in officiating, just like players make mistakes and coaches make mistakes. But our goal is to try and get it right, but not unduly interfere with the game. If we used video replay on every single call, our games would be 6 hours long. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have any flow of momentum. And so what we've tried to do is come up with a system that is relatively simple, subject to the law of unintended consequences, and at the same time deals with egregious calls that really matter in the outcome of the game. And I think for the most part, we've accomplished it. And I think we've also learned with the combination of the coach's challenge. And you only get one if you're wrong, because you have to have your timeout to do it in the case of goaltender interference. And I've, as I said, in the case of offsides, you get a two-minute penalty, which is pretty harsh. That, we don't want it overused. And what we've also learned is we're going to be very, very cautious before we even think about extending it.
And has there been a massive uptick, in your opinion, of embellishment to help, a goalie had now has to sell it to make the contact look ridiculous?
Well,
right?
But we're pretty good at following embellishment. In fact, we have a panel of people who every week look at, quote, embellishment calls and make a determination, and players get warnings. We advise the clubs who's been warned. We players ultimately can get fined. And so we think we don't have much relative to some other sports like soccer of an embellishment problem.
Uh-huh.
But it's, listen, everybody wants to win. Everybody's looking for an edge, and we respect that, but we've got to keep a lid on it.
This is NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman in studio with us here on The Ticket. So the NHL Finals had a couple of great storylines. You got Ovechkin over here, and then you got an expansion team over here. Both of those storylines weren't embraced, though, by everybody. One, Ovechkin probably was. What a story. But then the expansion thing was a bit controversial. I am not against it. I thought it was great. But obviously, you know that there was some feedback. There's a guy on our station who put it, who said it feels like it messes with the natural order of things.
What is, in this day and age, the natural order of things? It was intriguing. And there were a variety of factors at play. We believed when we made the decision to expand to Las Vegas that, in fact, this was a market that would support professional hockey, would support professional sports. And it was a community looking for things that other major cities, the greater Las Vegas area has 2.5 million people. They were looking for things that other cities had. And in fact, for a reason I'll discuss in a second, it really brought the community together. And the buzz throughout the suburbs and on the strip during the final, during the playoffs, during the regular season was incredible. We have the tightest system in terms of player movement and what teams can spend in all the major sports. We have the most extraordinary competitive balance. And so bringing in a new team, we needed to ensure that they'd at least be competitive. And they were. Did anybody expect them to be this competitive? I don't think so. But George McPhee, the general manager, did a very good job of putting together a team that had a skill set that would be fun to watch, very entertaining, and the players bonded together quickly. But what also happened was, in wake of the tragic shootings on October 1st, the team opened a week later at home. It was emotional. It was cathartic. The players, hockey players being hockey players, having just come to town, they were in the community immediately after the shootings. They were with first responders. They went to hospitals. They went to survivors. This team for Las Vegas at this point in time in the team's history and what had happened in the city became a catalyst for unity and healing. And the bond that was forged, and I think on some level, and I can't quantify this, and you may think it's mumbo jumbo, I think that they believed, the players did, that they were playing for a higher purpose. And I think it motivated them throughout the season. And you know, athletes can have a variety of forms of motivation, and I think this really impacted them as it did the city.
Well, there's no doubt watching those games that that's a model situation for a southern market, for an expansion market. It's like, could you bottle that and put that in some of the markets that could use a little bit of health from time to time? But, I mean, it's unbelievable how that worked.
But also, when you look at our competitive balance, teams can turn around their fortunes overnight. So two seasons ago, the team with the worst record in our league was the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah.
47-point turnaround, they make the playoffs. From worst to the playoffs. New Jersey Devils were worst in the East. They made the playoffs. And so the good news and the bad news, if you're somebody working at a team or playing for a team or you're a fan, you've got hope at the start of the season that your team can do it all, can make the playoffs, win it all, but it's hard to win.
Yes, it is.
Because it's so competitive.
This is Commissioner Gary Bettman for a few more minutes. I guess I better break into the speed round here just a little bit because we are running short on time. But there have been some work stoppages over the course of time. Usually it starts with a feeling like the league is not financially healthy from an ownership standpoint. Are we in a good spot now financially? Do we feel good about how the league is so we can avoid future sad seasons of no hockey?
Listen, nobody likes work stoppages, especially me. But in the last two rounds of negotiations, there were fundamental changes that needed to be made. The game wasn't healthy on or off the ice going back two work stoppages ago. And for years, we had been talking to the union about needing to fix it for the health of the game. Because, you know, we look at our competitive balance now, but if you go back prior to 2004, we had the dead puck era. Teams couldn't compete. There were teams with $90 million payrolls and teams with $20 million payrolls, and that didn't make for very entertaining hockey.
We were more successful back then.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to adapt. but what the system we have now and the 50-50 sharing with the players is a fair system, and as we talked about a few minutes ago, it gives us the most incredible competitive balance because all of our teams can now afford to compete, and that means we emphasize speed and skill, lead changes, excitement, unpredictability, as opposed to the team that scores the first goal, that's the end of the game, game's over. When you go to the last 2004 Stanley Cup final, between Tampa and Calgary, team that scored the first goal won every game. There was no ebb and flow. We've had more lead changes. We've had more scoring. Scoring's actually up to almost six goals a game at 5.9. The product is better because the system works. So it wasn't just the economics. It was the whole system just wasn't giving us the ability to show the best of our game.
So do we feel that we fixed these problems and we're good now? We should not fear Armageddon again?
There are two sides to that dance.
So sure.
You're going to have to talk to the Players Association, but we think the system that we have now is working the way it was intended to.
Okay.
Well, Donald Fear doesn't usually get into...
Everything's fine.
Just for your listeners, we're talking about the executive director of the National Hockey League Players Association.
Yes, right. Sir.
Who prior to that was at baseball.
Right.
He sure was.
And... There was never any problems. Very smooth when he would deal with the ownership in baseball.
Don and I have a very strong, constructive relationship.
Good.
Okay.
That's good to hear.
We'll
remember that.
I'm wondering what is your mindset now, and how much has it changed over the many years, and the mindset regarding the fact that you are much like an umpire, you have no home city. So Sagan,
I get booed everywhere.
That's what I mean. Sagan gets booed in many arenas, but then at least he gets to come home, and he's for 41 games. Everybody loves him. Being booed everywhere, has your mind, like, did it affect you differently back then, and have you calloused your mind, or how does that work?
Well, two things. One, I think if you look around the sports landscape, commissioners getting booed isn't just limited to me. And it tells you, secondly, that our fans are passionate, they care, and that's good. And whether it's like politicians or other commissioners, it's just a fact of life. And frankly, if everybody who comes up to me after I've been booed and says, you know, I wasn't booing you, I'm sorry everybody did that. If everybody who said that didn't boo me, then I wouldn't be booed.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It really is. I'll probably be booed tonight, and that's okay. I want people to have a good time. It's about the game. It's about the players. It's about the teams you root for. You know, if people don't pay attention to commissioners, that's okay too. And if they do, then we know they're passionate about the game.
Did you have to teach your kids that when they're wondering why dad?
They've my kids and my grandkids have learned to adapt. You know, when this is a position that has a lot of visibility. It has on occasion been subject to criticism, and you have to have a thick skin.
Yeah. Last one from me, Mr. Commissioner, and that would be, this is something I obviously complain about being a Dallas enthusiast, is the way your national TV people kind of sort their national broadcasts. I feel like we have a couple superstars down here. I also feel like somehow Dallas, as big as it is and as much of a power market it is in so many sports, it feels like you can often be a well-kept secret because you play in Dallas, and therefore the Blackhawks, Rangers, Bruins, the usual suspects are on national TV all the time. Dallas, I think last year was on national TV twice. They were hypothetically a good team for part of the year. And are you comfortable with how your national TV partners sort of grow the league by throwing the exact same teams at the national market at all times?
Actually, they vary it a little bit more than you would think. Some of that, large part of it, is performance related. When Dallas wins their next Stanley Cup, I promise you the next year there'll be more than two appearances on national TV. You know, in this media-driven age with so many choices, ratings are important. And we in the networks look to maximize ratings and maximize the number of people that are going to be connecting with us either on digital media platforms or on more traditional TV. And so market size is a factor, and Dallas is important there, but so is performance. And it changes over time. There are some teams that have been historically strong. If you look at the number of games that were televised and then you see they trail off, the number goes down. So it is in flux. It's not the same formula that we use every year. But the good news is the regionals do a great job of covering our teams. And again, as the team's performance improves, so will its national exposure.
Well, it's good to have you in Dallas.
Great to be here.
We appreciate your time, and we thought you'd like to see how June 22nd feels outside. You look like you're dressed properly.
No, not as you're dressed properly. You're in shorts and a T-shirt. I'm in a sport jacket and long pants, and I'm going to stay inside as much as I can or get shorts on.
That's a great plan. Great plan. I recommend flip-flops as well, but it might not match the suit. Commissioner, thank you for your time.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
That's NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.